Pa Pachamama. Let's learn how to build a village. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to How to Build a Village podcast. We talk about all things related to sustainable development and living in community. Today's episode is about the philosophy and architectural thinking behind natural building, particularly with Cobb, as inspired by the hand-sculpted house written by Yanto Evans, Michael G. Smith, and Linda Smiley. Before I begin, I'd like to share the following essay from the all-time classic Henry David Thoreau, Walden, written in 1854 on his take on shelter. So here it goes. In the savage state, every family owns a shelter as good as the best and sufficient for its coarser and simpler wants. But I think that I speak within bounds when I say that, though the birds of the air have their nests and the fox their holes and the savages their wigwams, in modern civilized society, not more than one half the families own a shelter. In the large towns and cities where civilization especially prevails, the number of those who own a shelter is a very small fraction of the whole. The rest pay an annual tax for this outside garment of all, become indispensable summer and winter, which would buy a village of Indian wigwams, but now helps to keep them poor as long as they live. I do not mean to insist here on the disadvantage of hiring compared with owning, but it is evident that the savage owns his shelter because it costs so little, while the civilized man hires his commonly because he cannot afford to own it, nor can he in the long run any better afford to hire. But, answers one, by merely paying this tax, the poor civilized man secures an abode which is a palace compared with the savages. An annual rent of from $25 to $100 entitles him to the benefit of the improvements of centuries, spacious apartments, clean paint and paper, Rumford fireplace, black plastering, Venetian blinds, copper pump, spring lock, a commodious cellar, and many other things. But how happens it that he who is said to enjoy these things is so commonly a poor civilized man, while the savage who has them not is rich as a savage? If it is asserted that civilization is a real advance in the condition of man, it must be shown that it has produced better dwellings without making them more costly. And the cost of a thing is the amount of what I will call life, which is required to be exchanged for it, immediately or in the long run. An average house in this neighborhood costs perhaps $800, and to lay up this sum will take from 10 to 15 years of the laborer's life, even if he is not encumbered with a family, so that he must have spent more than half his life commonly before his wigwam will be earned. If we suppose him to pay a rent instead, this is but a doubtful choice of evils. Would the savage have been wise to exchange his wigwam for a palace on these terms? All right, so let's dive into this. So, one of the biggest questions for anybody today is, how am I living? Do you feel at peace and at home in your living? Why? Or do you feel uneasy and anxious in your living environment? I really enjoyed reading through this book I got, The Hand-Sculpted House, and meeting Yanto and Linda in person, the authors at Cobb College. I think they've done a fantastic job at redefining what it means to live sensibly. They are the founders of Cobb Cottage Company, located in Coquille, Oregon. They conduct hands-on research on natural building methods and materials and offer training and support for others to become natural building professionals. Yeah, I was pretty impressed by their work and what they knew and what they had to teach. It was a good place. So first of all, let's get into the definition of Cobb. So what is Cobb? You'd most likely recognize it once you see it if you've never been in one before, and coming across it, you know it's easy to conclude that it looks like one of those old homes from medieval Europe, particularly from Britain, where the word cob was created from the old English root meaning a lump or rounded mass. Technically speaking, it's a building material comprised of a mixture of earth, clay, sand, straw, and water, of which is hand-worked into monolithic earthen walls, so meaning the wall comes up as one piece as opposed to bricks or separate pieces of block. So this means no forms, no cement, and no machinery. Although this episode is predominantly cotton-focused, I'd like to also mention that there is no one turnkey solution to building sustainably. It all depends on your situation and what's available. So cob is highly advantageous over a lot of the other natural construction methods due to the simple fact that you can find clay and sand, the fundamental ingredients, almost anywhere you are in the world. Again, depending on your situation, it may or may not be the most ideal. So, for example, if you live on a northern-facing slope in the northern hemisphere near a buttload of straw, the obvious choice would probably be to build with straw bale. That's because of its superior insulation and availability. But here's an important thing to consider now. Cob's insulation may be poor, but it is one of the best buildings to keep you warm during the winter. Now, before you run away in confusion, let me explain how it does that. It has good thermal mass, meaning it has an excellent ability to buffer heat or coolness, or coolth, however you like to roll there. The trick is, you need to allow in as much winter sun as you can and as little as summer sun. And you achieve this simply by how you decide to position the building and how you design it. The rule of thumb discovered here is that heat flows through cob at 1 inch per hour. So a 2 foot thick wall takes about 24 hours for heat to completely pass through. But then by that time, you know, you've already gone through a day and you're going through the same process. So it's very temperature stable. And apart from cob, there are also some areas that are known for their particular traditional building, such as adobe in the southern western United States, where earthen bricks are dried under the sun and later stacked like Legos. However, your climate is a bit cool and damp, cob is the way to go. And it's also the easiest and most forgiving method to start out with. So this is a good one for beginners. People just starting out natural building for the first time. It's really pleasant too. No need for machinery, no need for specialized tools, just your hand, energy, and a bunch of friends or family. So why should we care about all of this in the first place? How will living in such a building benefit you personally? So for one, it is healthy as compared to modern buildings. It's like comparing genetically modified food sprayed with pesticide chemicals to those grown organically. As growing organically is healthy for the grower and the consumer, so is building a natural home healthy for the builder and the inhabitant. Many of the first pioneers pushing for natural buildings most notably come from those with chemical sensitivities whose bodies simply can't survive in a modern building. A study conducted by the American Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, concluded that indoor air contains more hazardous chemicals than outside air, even in highly industrialized areas. And also a similar study down in the UK published a similar conclusion that there are around 200 chemicals at any given time in the indoor air we breathe, most of the notable ones being formaldehyde and benzene. Formaldehyde is emitted by many common construction materials like glues, plastics, and fiberglass, and benzene is highly used in paint, both of which have already been proven to cause cancer. And they are also both found in common manufactured carpets and are constantly emitting residual fumes. On the other hand, stone, wood, straw, and earth are not only non-toxic but life-enhancing. These have been the materials we have evolved with for hundreds of thousands of years. Clay, for example, is even curative and therapeutic, knowing to absorb toxins. And I remember a farming community I stayed with near Mendoza, Argentina, and they use clay for all kinds of applications. One of the farmers there had actually cut off his finger, not when I was there, thank God, but before I got there. And all he had, and all he did, what he was telling me this afterwards, was he just kept a glob of clay on the end where his finger was to help him heal. I used a similar too when I was there. I had my fingers smashed and caught in between a window seal, and while I was screaming for my mother, the farmers rushed over and applied some clay, you know, on my finger, and I just wore it there. I think it was like a day or two, and it really worked. And I, you know, after that, I don't know. After that, I was pretty sold on looking clay differently. You know, and I remember also there too, and some other places I've been to in Panama and I think in Colombia too, doing clay baths. You know, when you just rub your body all around clay and let it dry, and it just makes you feel so healthy. And once it's built into the walls and finished with a natural home, it kind of has the same effect in a different way. It just feels good to be in the building. And I remember staying in one, I think it was Cobb, in a farming community in Portugal, and sleeping there and hanging out there is just the most pleasant thing and nothing I've ever experienced, you know, spending most of my life in a modern building. And earthen buildings, mostly built without ceilings or cement stucco, so they breathe gently and slowly through the entire wall surface. Also, having the ability to absorb airborne irritants within the building and soak up or level out excess humidity or dryness. So they're like an equalizer. It's really cool. Secondly, living in a natural home enhances psychological well-being. Right angles, flat surfaces that are all one color and constant uniformity doesn't exist in the natural world. They also demand immense energy to produce, which ultimately makes them weaker against the entropic forces of nature. I really liked what Yanta wrote in The Hand-Sculpted House, saying that subconsciously we get an anxious feeling that something is wrong here in the building we're in, keeping us nervous and stressed, keeping our senses dull with the monotony of it all. Most likely contributing to our addiction to sensory stimulation through drugs and electronic media. Everyone whom I met who lived in a natural home, from Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, Colombia, Portugal, Scotland, absolutely loves it. And I did too. And after hanging out and sleeping in some of them, boy, did I feel refreshed and great and healthy. Thirdly, building your own natural home can be your escape from economic slavery. And here's why. In today's fake economy, where everything's overbubbled these days, especially in the real estate market in the developed world, where most new modest homes cost around $100,000, taking a lifetime to pay off, living essentially for the bank, building a Cobb home, for example, will cost you on the high end, the absolute high end, $10,000. But this all depends on how you go about it. Again, Yanto did an incredible job and outlining the opportunity cost of building and owning a conventional home versus a natural one. And mathematically speaking, a $100,000 house, for example, with a 30-year mortgage will end up costing you $200,000 versus a naturally built home for around, let's say, $5,000 to $10,000 around there, after which you pay, you're done, and you're done. And that's it. No more paying anybody any recurring costs. So just imagine the freedom that comes along with this. The cheapest Cobb building ever recorded was by the Cobb Cottage, costing only $500. And, you know, with this to happen, you know, it's definitely possible, but it also demands some sacrificing as well and some creative problem solving. Even if you can't afford it, not spending money to build your home can be an effective political action, reclaiming power from the manufacturers, retailers, and corporations who all thrive on people's dependency. So some of the tricks to make this possible can include a variety of strategies, like learning how to do it all yourself and avoid having to hire specialized help, and or involving the government, whose attention is usually expensive and not even helpful, according to some. And I'll talk about more about this later and built-in codes and such. So the upswing of this is that you can involve your family members, friends, and neighbors to help out, throw a big party, and provide food and beverage in return. You could also try to check demolition sites or construction dumpsters for throwaway materials you could incorporate, and even call excavation contractors, who are most of the times willing to take their excavated soil and concrete rubble off their hands. So another benefit of living in a natural building is its comfort, especially with temperature control, energy savings, and especially when it's designed right, which we'll go into depth later. And Cobb in particular also blocks sound incredibly well. So if you live off a noisy freeway, you can make your Cobb wall a little bit thicker on that side, which will keep the inside as quiet as you can imagine. Number 5, natural building is empowering and socially inclusive. Anybody can easily build with Cobb, especially in the elderly, children, the handicapped, the impoverished, etc. It's incredibly safe, and there's no need to be sucked into the big money business of house construction with all its problems and risks. The resulting difference in social dynamics is incredible. The process builds community where people depend more on one another and their own creativity, to meet their shelter needs instead of handing over all their power to the governments, corporations, heavily processed materials, and expensive machines. And at the end of the day, when you're done, it just feels great that you've built something with your own hands and with the help of hands of others. Because it is also a community activity. You know, doing it yourself would take you quite a bit of time. But once you get everybody in on it, man, not only is it fun, but it slashes the time in half. Benefit number six includes tradition and heritage. Before the industrial cartels, building industry, and the government conspired against the people from building their own homes, building one's own home was a strong tradition throughout the ages across all continents. You'll see historical cob comes from all over England from hundreds of years ago, which are still standing today. And if you go to India or the Middle East, you'll see natural structures over there, thousands of years old and still standing strong. There's even a multi-story cob apartment high-rise in Yemen, which you'll see a picture in the hand-sculpted house, and from medieval times. It's, I think, 13 stories, something like that. But it's incredible, and it's still standing. And it's very interesting to see the durability of these structures across the ages. And even interestingly, this one surprised me, in high seismic zones. So this leads me to benefit number seven, which is its durability. And we're on the note of cob here, by the way. It's interesting to note that there's a cob mansion in Nelson, New Zealand that has survived 150 years in one of the world's most active seismic zones with two major earthquakes that shook it, since it was built without even a crack. And the thing is, the whole town surrounding it collapsed to the ground. The primary reason for this, for these anti-seismic properties, is due to the locking together of all the different stems of straw that is incorporated into the cob mix. This benefit, however, only includes those structures that are built from earthen materials. We're talking about cob, but not including biological materials such as bamboo, palm, conifer, etc. Although I do feel bamboo could be anti-seismic. I would have to look into that. If you know about bamboo, again, leave your comments. I'd like to hear from you. Number eight is the environmental impact of natural building, and is the most preached, with good reason. We simply have no other choice. We haven't seen much change yet because the fake economy hasn't popped yet. So when it does, building with locally available materials will be the instinct. Modern buildings today depend on many unsustainable and environmentally harming operations, such as mining gypsum for drywall, iron for rebar and roofing, and lime for cement. Furthermore, the energy used to convert these raw materials into their usable form is ginormous. This also doesn't mention the biggest granddaddy of them all, which is wood consumption. Statistically speaking, substituting earth for wood in the walls, floors, and finishes in a standard 2,000 square foot house, per se, will spare 60 to 80% of the lumber used, which has taken away 94% of the United States original forest. And building natural, there's no such thing as waste material. When you dig your hole for clay, you'll already end up with an excavation for a pond where you'll be solving multiple problems at once. When the building is destroyed, it just goes back into the ground. Now, I like to transition the discussion more towards sustainable design fundamentals, beginning with a small anecdote from Yanto, written his book from his experience in Kenya, called Steel Roofs in Kenya. In Kenya, right on the equator, we encountered an entire village newly rebuilt, completely of corrugated steel, roofs, walls, room dividers. This in a region noted for its exquisitely built circular earthen homes. We stopped this truck seeking an explanation, and as always, a little crowd gathered under the vertical sun. Why, we asked, were they opting for a material that in the tropics lasts only a few years, is freezing cold at night, and is an oven in the daytime? The answer surprised us all. They wanted to be modern and knew how people like ourselves lived in other countries. They say, in America, where you live, is it not correct that everybody can afford a metal house? Somehow the word had gotten out that U.S. houses are made of corrugated tin. Maybe a villager saw a movie about Alabama in the 1930s, who knows? not wanting to look as if they were backward, these people had been misled into abandoning their traditions for an imported material they will spend a lifetime to pay for. Yes, one woman agreed, in that flawless British school English only Africans can speak. It is utterly true that the new houses are too hot, and additionally, we have considerable difficulty conducting conversations when the rain comes, but this is the price of progress. I thought that was a funny anecdote, but it's interesting because that's, you know, not only Kenya, but it's everywhere. You know, in the United States, with building code regulations, it's not only backwards, but it's forced upon. So what's the change of state of mind to change this? You know, we could definitely begin by looking all around us and observing the laws of nature, and to use it to counteract the boxes that have been forced upon us to live in. And let's just push further instead into observing more from nature and seeing what golden gems and truths we could see from that. And when we take building into our own hands, then we'd have a little bit more guidance, some true guidance. These observances show us a world of probabilities, connections, and cause and effect, like the way life quickly occupies any niche it can exist in. There are also the laws of thermodynamics, of which was drilled in my head during my engineering curriculum at the university. But simply put, nothing is ever created or destroyed, and everything eventually falls apart with time. The paradigm to this is that life reflects this decay in the reverse, as all life feeds on death. Older ecosystems grow more complex with more life, but all while the sun's atoms are continuously decaying, releasing heat and energy. Another observation could be concluded as you try to find the same looking snowflake under a microscope. Everything is unique and no event ever repeats itself identically. There are also no monocultures in nature for living things, only exist in the company of other species. Nothing ever stops moving. Change is the only constant, although its speed can vary incredibly, such as growing bamboo, which grows incredibly fast, versus the sliding of continental shelves. Nature uses just as many resources as are necessary, and no more. Look at a bird's nest or a beaver dam. They're built just snug enough to serve its purpose. I remember visiting some ancient cave dwellings when I went exploring for cave paintings in Dominican Republic and Argentina. I remember thinking how small they were. It was hard to imagine a tribe of people in these tiny spaces. It was pretty cool, though. Finally, nature has a series of fundamental geometries, each for a certain set of phenomena at a particular scale. Biological forms tend to be irregularly curved. Natural objects never come in perfect squares, circles, triangles, right angles, straight lines, flat surfaces, and broken colors. And if they do arise, they are quickly set back to being diversified again. So how can we translate this all to building more sensibly with natural materials? The hand-sculpted house did a great job in simplifying the design process for the average person. I've touched briefly upon the importance of positioning of the home on the land so it maximizes natural sunlight and save you big time on energy costs. So let's assume you've been blessed with a raw piece of land that you like to build on. The authors highly recommend spending at least one full sun cycle on the land before you begin anything permanent. This way you'd be able to experience the land intimately and come to know all of its peculiarities. You'd also take the time to test the soils by taking a shovel and dig test pits in as many different locations and different kinds of places as you can, top of the hill, bottom of the valley, etc. And this way you'll find the perfect soil type to build your cob building with, which I'll go much later into detail in another episode when we get into like the nitty-gritty technicalities of the building process. Interestingly noted in the book here, the authors recommend to resist the temptation to build in the most pristine places. Why? Because a well-suited, beautiful building can improve an unattractive site, yet the same house can destroy a pristine one. I was kind of surprised when I read that one. It's always recommended to leave the most beautiful spots just the way they are. That way, you'd still have a place to cleanse your spirit and solitude when you need it. When looking where to locate your natural home, try to build on slopes because there you'll have good drainage of all types and a view as well. Just be aware of landslide potential. And by drainage, I mean You'll have the benefit of good airflow. Water will drain away from the dwelling. And if you use water to flush your waste, you'll have an easy time flushing it downhill by gravity, either to a leach field, orchard, garden, pond, whatever the application and type of wastewater. Flush poo-poo water in the garden or, you know, they grow for fruit trees, but be aware for your vegetables. It's also interesting to note that by selecting halfway up a hillside, you'll nestle yourself in the perfect temperature sweet spot. Again, if it's facing south, the better. Or north if you're in the southern hemisphere. And when you get into the design of cob homes in particular or any monolithic walled structures, you really have the freedom to mold it, design and curve it in any way you wish. I've seen many of these homes built like hobbit houses from the Lord of the Rings, and it's pretty cool. I mean, you step inside and it's completely crafted. You know, you could craft it to however you like. That's the beauty of it. It's your own artwork. It's a part of you that you jot down, you know, on a maybe twice or three times on, you know, sheet of paper, napkin, whatever, just get the basic idea. And you also, you know, they also recommend making a scale model of it too. So taking, let's say 1 foot equaling 1 inch in your scale model with the same mixture that you'll use. So you'll mix your clay, your sand, your straw, and you'll make the mixture, but you'll use that in the walls, but also you could use that in your scale model as well. And that way, you know, you could make your scale model of how you envision it, maybe make two or three. You lay them out on the sun and the elements and observe how the position of the sun or the elements interacts with it. And you see it interacting with your model, and you'll get some ideas and choose the best one or create another one until you feel it's right. Now, one thing I noticed too when I went to Cobb Cottage is all their structures built from Cobb were all curvilinear. I didn't see no squares, rectangles. You know, all the buildings were circled, curved, and just it takes advantage of the least amount of space, making it feel like you're in a big wide space. It's a very weird sensation. Very interesting, and that's why these types of natural homes feel very natural, because you don't see squares and straight edges in nature. Also, one common mistake with beginners, written from the authors, so described by the authors, is that, you know, everyone likes to start big and grand, and with, you know, they say start as small as you can within one season. So when you start building in, let's say, early spring, you know, have it done by the fall, and then you could add on to it later. You know, you could, it's easily to knock down the walls and add on to it later. I've seen that in a place in Argentina. They start at a place I've been to. They started with just a small one, and then they built around it and more onto it as materials came available and labor was available. So that's usually the strategy to go for. Start small and incrementally work your way upwards. All right, well, I think I'll end it at that. There's much more to cover on this, but I think, you know, be sensible to break this up into digestible episodes. So I hope you like this. Leave your comments or concerns, questions, and recommendations for anything you want to hear or want to know. Love to hear from you. Meanwhile, see you next time.